Hi, and welcome to the Diablo podcast. I'm your host, Zamp, and today I am joined by Nineball
Oh, hi.
and noted streamer, noted whale, and noted crow eater, Nerdwords.
Hello.
And we are brought to you by purediablo.com, your home for an ever-growing Diablo community, an expansive wiki, and of course, this podcast. Gentlemen, we have a lot to kind of touch on today because the floodgates have opened with Diablo, Diablo 3, Diablo 2, everything. We can talk about everything, but we're mainly going to focus on Diablo 4 tonight. Before we get to it and all the latest reveals, a couple of things to touch on. Let's talk Diablo 3. Major new season comes out. I know both of you are playing. How has your Diablo 3 season been? Nerdwords?
It's been good. It's been really good. I've had a lot of fun this ladder for sure. I think I started Friday night with the kickoff. I try to as best I can. I've had seasons where I've been a day or two late, but this season I can start right away, which is great. I had a bunch of friends in Discord, chatting and just BSing as we leveled up. The leveling process with the Altar of Rites was so cool. Like honestly, like it really changed the way like you thought about how you were leveling and stuff, and like the whole leveling meta has really kind of shifted. And it's while it's very small and not a long portion of the game by any means, and it wasn't even before this. It was just more interesting and more fun because it was just so different. It's been very similar to the last like half dozen seasons. So yeah, that was really nice. I love the leveling experience. The Altar of Rites is so cool. Like it's been a lot of fun going through and trying to hit the different requirements. Just a really nice change of pace in the game. Definitely like super thrilled with the Tal Rasha Wizard. Like it is so much fun to play. I'm obsessed with that build. Thank you, whoever turned the right knobs at Blizzard for that to happen again. Thank you. I appreciate you because that build is so much fun. And yeah, just honestly having a lot of fun. Like, having a lot of friends playing different classes and people joining late and getting rushed up and joining the group and stuff and just having some fun with it. But it's been a lot of fun for sure, and probably keep playing for at least a few weeks. I think this one might have a little more leg to it than I thought it would. I thought it'd be done by Monday. Well, the power creep, right? You just figure, you get the journey done. If you're not going to be pushing end game greater rifts, you're kind of done at that point. But I'm still playing. I'm still at work thinking about getting home to play D3, so that's pretty cool.
And
Yeah,
Nineball.
I mean, very similar situation over here. That is like it's both awesome because of like the power boost that you get, from the altar. And just even like little things like automatically picking up and salvaging all like your yellows and blues. Like
Oh, chef's kiss. Oh.
that is just amazing, without even like any of the other like damage boosts or anything out. But it's a lot of like those little benefits are just like so gratifying that want you to like keep pushing, because now I'm not having to like, oh, I'll pick up like a couple yellows here and there because I need to like craft some stuff. Now it just is happening. The having the extra things to do to unlock the altar has also been a bit more engaging, because you're like, well, do I push a little bit for trying to get the guardian? Do I just want to power level GRs, or do I want to focus and it's like I gotta go farm the Staff of Herding, which I still have to farm the Staff of Herding. I've helped two other friends go through and farm up, and just the sheer, the my heart drops when they go through and say, ah, gemstone. And I was just like, and then the second one, ah, gemstone.
I got
No, I'm
stupid
still.
lucky with the gemstone.
Yeah.
Stupid lucky. I've had friends go as many as like, because we were tracking like how many games it would take. I know one of my buddies, he got to like 96 kills on Chiltara. That means like there's more games that she wasn't in, right? Or it was Icefall
Yeah.
Caves, whatever. So it took him forever. But the funny thing is that the third kill he had, I joined him and I got it in his game.
Yeah,
The third
nice.
kill ever, right? So
Yeah.
I didn't even have to fight, and I did it before I even got to that point of the altar. We were kind of
Yeah.
like just kind of checking spots throughout the leveling experience. So by the time I got to that part of the altar, I just like was able to finish the whole tree because I had everything else already kind of locked in. So it, yeah, I got dumb lucky, but yeah, that has definitely been the grind of the altar for sure.
I want to say I ended up having to what is it? I like I up converted probably like 20 rings, I spent thousands of blood shards, you know, roll trying to get rings, and I spent like 700-800 forgotten souls flipping a puzzle ring to try and get an ancient, and then I found a primal and I just crafted the fucker. Yeah, it's just so that way I can move on. And to this point, I still have not yet found an ancient puzzle ring, so I would still be stuck there. And that aspect, you know, had there at least not that been. And of course, I've been paid. I'm paying for that because that was the last primal I found. Yeah,
yeah, it's tough. It's tough.
Yeah, I want to say I think I'm only at about like 20 hours for this season,
sure.
Give or take. And so, I mean, it still is incredibly early, but like, you know, one of my friends has already unlocked everything. They just got enough primals, and I've been playing side by side with them, you know, so they have about the same number of hours that I played. And then I have another one that, you know, I think they found like two more than I did. And so they've almost finished the unlock because they didn't have to waste ash in order to craft the ancient primal or an ancient puzzle ring. That so they're like one unlock ahead of me.
It's not a Diablo game if RNG is not screwing you.
Pretty much. So that's where I'm at right now, where it is, you know, it's like on the other side, like I finished Guardian. I guess technically I haven't, because I still have to get like I keep remembering I have to actually like cube things. That's the last thing that I have to do. So it's just I have to, you know, a round of GRs I have to remember to not just salvage everything and throw them into the cube so I can finish Guardian. But that's, yeah, I mean, record time going through. We've been speed running like GR 115s, which I know like isn't really all that high, but it's high for me,
it's still high.
Yeah. Especially like 2 days into the season for me. Normally, like, I'll get up to the point where I can speed run like 95s or 100 solo or something like that, like a week or two after I've, you know, gotten to around like Paragon 1000 or whatever. And then in this one, just because of the powers of the altar and everything like that, like I'm Paragon 800 and I'm speedrunning 115s, which to me is just like mind blowing.
Yeah.
And also just like it's the first season I've opened with like a kind of like a full group of going through and playing with people. I'm almost fully augmented at this point because of all of the petrified screams. Like it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. It really is. I think, I've been higher Paragon at this point in the season, because we're, 5 days in now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Yeah, so like 5 days in. I've definitely been higher Paragon, specifically in the Petrified Scream season. Like, that season, like, XP was just, like, crazy easy to achieve.
Yeah.
So I'm not as high Paragon as I was then, but, like, my journey was complete the first night. My altar was complete the first night. And this isn't even on the leaderboard, just perspective on where Tau Rasha is just crazy right now. But I just finished a 142, which is the highest I've done in the game solo. So that was really cool. I'm definitely trying to get to 150 eventually, and I can do it, just RNG right now. But
my question is when you did the 142, where did that place you on the leaderboard?
Not even on the leaderboard.
That was definitely one of the ones like my friend, I think, did like my buddy Derek, he did like a 130, I think, on Monday and didn't place on the leaderboard. And it was just like, wow, that is broken, isn't it?
I mean, Saturday afternoon, like not even a full 24 hours in, there were already 80 wizards that had done a 150.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy, right?
Crazy.
Yeah, crazy. But it's also like, it's been stupid fun. Like, it might be a little broken. It definitely is like breaking certain aspects of the game, but it's honestly been a lot of fun to just kind of goof off, have some fun with it, play. I'm like full ancient of just about, I mean, almost full augments. Like, I'm stacked right now. I just gotta get in and play some grifts, and that's really fun. Like, that, I think that's the biggest thing with this season, is that like the altar does break a lot of the game in a lot of ways, but it also opens up like what I want to do more. And I think that's super awesome, right? Like, when I'm at work, like, I'm sitting there thinking, like, man, I want to try, can I get to 145, 46 tonight and just push up one by one? You know, do I want to do on that, you know, do that tonight, or do I just want to, you know, blast some grifts and try to get, you know, just some more XP? Like, I don't know. It's been a really fun season. But I'm also still thinking about the D2 ladder in the back of my head, right? Because that was the weekend before. So, like, I've got some stuff I want to try on some builds over there, which is really cool. But right now, D3 has got my attention for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you know, just because you kind of like mentioned it to tangent maybe a little bit, that I've been one of those people that I never really was concerned about like power creep, you know, because there's always people who are talking about like power creep and there's too much power creep and all this other type of stuff. But it's just like, you know, in Diablo 2, like, you know, your ceiling of difficulty is like here, you
Really
know,
low.
it's low. So all of the various classes and specs and stuff like that, it's not whether you can do the content, is how fast you can do it. And it's always about like going through and you know, shoving yourself into things that are just gonna super speed clear, you know, whether it be, you know, mech runs or, you know, tribunal runs, bail runs, cowls, whatever it is that your particular build excels at or want to do, how fast you can do it in. And Diablo 3, because like the GR150 is the upper limit, and for most people, that's like way up here. And
Right.
so there is like that kind of like that feeling of the power creep and all that. But if you look at it in terms of Diablo 2, like in Diablo 2, everyone can do the hardest difficulty in the game, you
Right.
know. But in Diablo 3, that's not been the case. Not everybody can do a solo 150. Not every class could do a solo 150 like prior, and not every set could do a solo 150. And you know, we're at least now at the point where pretty much everybody, every class, and a bunch of different sets, you know, various builds are going to be capable of doing a solo 150, you know, this season with the benefits of the altar. And to me, like, I don't know, I feel as if that's a good thing, you know. You
Yeah.
know, it's just it's feeling, or it's more options to play your way. You know, it's just it's things where it's, you're not really too concerned with what is the balance between like these classes and everything like that. Like, sure, okay, wizards can clear 150s. You know, I just hit my microphone. Wizards can clear 150s. You know, like day one, and you know, witch doctors will do it on day four. You know, something like that.
Yeah.
Probably, actually, I haven't even looked at witch doctors. It's probably day two. But you know, it's like, you know, it is, as long as everyone is capable of doing it, I don't think that it's that big of a concern. Like, power creep in Diablo 3 to me doesn't really mean anything, because we're not even at like that power level parity that Diablo 2 achieved.
No,
Mostly because,
absolutely.
you know,
Yeah. I
mostly
mean
because
it
like the infinite scaling has its own issues and stuff.
Right. And realistically, like Diablo 2, like you said, it's like imagine if every build in Diablo 2, you know, was able to do GR150, but your Hammerdens and your Blizzard Sorceresses and all that can do a GR150 in 3 minutes instead, right? It's that's
Right.
right, that's the difference. But I think that like the one thing that I will say is pretty jarring, at least from what I've experienced, because I had a group that started on the ladder right away. I know you had some too. I saw you on Discord. But like my friends, I also had friends that popped in the next day, and that's where it was really kind of jarring, because like, you know, first night if you were leveling up, I thought the experience was really cool and really different with the Altar of Rites and stuff. But if you're just coming in right now, getting power leveled to 70, getting handed some gear, you go from nothing to holy shit so fast. Like
Yeah.
my buddy like literally started a character in an hour was Paragon 960. Right? With full gear and already getting some ancient pieces and already had two augments. In an hour. Right? Now
Yeah.
mind you, he had three buddies who had played for the whole 24-hour period before that and was able to toss him some stuff and help him out. But I mean that's crazy. And look, there's always like those catch-up mechanics and you always boost your buddies again. But I think that like I kind of feel bad for him because he's not really gonna get to experience the altar the way that we did. It was a lot of fun like going through that leveling experience. So yeah, I don't know. I think that's the one thing where it's like that's kind of, you know, not great. But again, it's like the last hurrah, right? So the season's been a lot of fun. And yeah, you're right. Like why not open it up so that every build can just push that power? And with that potion power right now, holy crap, it's just ridiculous. It's
Yeah.
fun, but it is ridiculous.
Okay, so we're gonna dovetail too much into a Diablo 3 focused podcast, and I don't want to talk about the fact that I'm only Paragon 30. So let's just move on to other things. Okay, so it's been good, and I will state my failure has just been a result of time. I did have a blast with the altar. I just haven't had much time, unfortunately. Shame. Shame on me.
Same,
I
same.
know. I know. But now I'm excited. I want to go back in. I did choose Witch Doctor, and yeah, It's a life choice. Okay. So,
Yeah, you just you seem to be making those decisions a lot, don't you?
I do.
Yeah.
It's okay. Speaking
I'm
of
sure
permanent,
the fleas are appreciative.
life choices, Hell's Inc. is back, gentlemen. Hell's Inc. is back, and has hit the road. The first one kicked off in Las Vegas this weekend, with a special guest star, Rod Ferguson, getting his own Diablo tattoo. What
It's
did
a
Rod
necromain.
Ferguson?
It's a necromain.
Yep.
Yeah.
He is more dedicated to playing a necromancer than I am, and
It's
that says
true.
something, you
It's
know.
true.
Not only did he get the Necromancer class logo, but he got a very large Necromancer class logo. So that is a big commitment. That's a lot of area.
Also super badass.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a very well done tattoo. I did enjoy it. But it's back, and I did make mention of this on Twitter. This feels like so they did it in the summer of 22. Here we are in winter of 23. I would like to see this happen again. I think it's kind of cool if they did it for the 1 year anniversary. Maybe it's not an every year thing, but I would be down with going and getting another tattoo at some point because it is a good time. Thoughts, gentlemen, as you were taking a look at the Hell's Inc. this weekend?
I miss the Hell's Inc. in Miami because of a dermatology appointment. If that's not fate, I don't know what is. But
Yeah.
yeah, I would definitely like I would like to see it go through and continue. I would love to do it. You know, it's like I would like to get a tattoo. So.
Yeah, I mean, I missed it because I was flying, like literally landing from a family vacation the day they were in Chicago, and we're in Milwaukee, so you know, a couple hours away. Which I totally could have made it for, but like, you know, tired from traveling all day, flying from Florida, you know, kid in the car, girlfriend with you too. So it's like, okay, probably not the best time to be like, hey, you know what, you want to just go to Chicago so I can get a tattoo and you guys can just wait around for me all day? That'd be great. Would have been awesome. And they probably actually would have supported me to do it too. But you know, it is what it is. But no, I absolutely would do it. Hey, if they come to Milwaukee, I'm there 100%. If they go to Chicago, I'll probably be there anyway, as long as I can plan ahead of it. But yeah, I've got a Diablo tattoo, but I'm definitely down to get some more for sure. Especially because I paid for this one, so if I'm able to get it
Yeah.
free, that's even better.
Right.
Like, don't challenge me with a good time. That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a good time. I want to point out that the Hell's Inc. From the summer and the Hell's Inc. that is happening right now are a little different. The summer initially we weren't told much, right? We heard some rumblings. Then the first one in LA happened, and then Chicago was next. And that's when we found out about not only were we getting beta access, but getting a copy of the game and then the tattoo. There is no copy of the game for this version of Hell's Inc., though the participants are getting pins and patches, bags, and some other genuine swag, which I thought was really cool too. I'm fine, and I didn't go in expecting to get the game in general. Walking away with some additional cool Diablo swag is fair game. Plus the free tattoo, right?
Yeah.
I think that's awesome.
And you
So,
get a you know, a special in-game title that no one else can get.
yeah, that is pretty cool.
we'll talk about some more titles later on in the show. But that is probably the title I'm gonna stick with because it does have that air of exclusivity to it that feels like kind of cool.
Oh,
And
the EP so big. So big EP.
that's all I really care about, as we discussed
The
earlier
cool
pre-show.
title, the
Flux will
cool
be proud.
title is never as good as the rare title.
That's it. It's
That's
true. That's it.
what it is.
That's the
And
one.
then,
Speaking
I
to
will.
like the pre-show, it could have been banana sandwiches, and you'd still be wearing that title.
Yeah, it would be.
Yeah.
Bananas are gross. Okay, so transitioning from one Diablo event to another, there was a Diablo fashion show, which feels like an amalgamation of words that doesn't make sense. I did not just have a stroke. There was a Diablo themed fashion show this weekend as well, with some various couture looks. Gentlemen, which of these runway looks will you be donning to the Met Gala?
It's definitely one of those ones where I've seen the pictures of like the outfits, and I see the words that this was a Diablo inspired fashion. I believe it's like the whole show wasn't Diablo related, but it was just like the one designer was bringing out like Diablo inspired fashions for it. And even knowing that those were supposed to be it, I have no idea. I still can't believe that those are actually supposed to be like Diablo fashions. And then having said that, probably like the mummy looking one, that's sure. The one that I would wear. Yeah.
I choose death. I don't think I could pull off any of those. Ain't no one trying to see me in any of that anyways. What I would say though is, I think it's kind of weird. It's kind of weird, right? I think we can, even if you think it's cool, it's a little weird. But I think what is really cool about it is it speaks to like how much Diablo is really like in the universe, right? Like this is a AAA game. That Halsey is a big fan of, right? Has the song, like that whole thing that happened with the performance that she did. And then you've got like this fashion show. It shows that there's a part of Diablo that is creeping into mainstream culture or different parts of like culture. And I think that's really cool. Like, I'm not going to like wear these clothes. I mean, I don't know anyone in the world that will wear those clothes. They probably could even afford those clothes. Right. But it is interesting. It's a conversation thing, right? Yeah. And, it's cool to know that a fashion designer likes Diablo enough to create a line based around that. So there's that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
From my understanding, it's not like I, like, understand fashion, but a lot of the times, right. Like, some of these, like, fashion shows and stuff, they're not actually, like, designed to be worn. They're just, right. like, a lot of the things are just, like, out there to be out there. And some of those were definitely... out there
for sure.
No publicity is bad publicity, because everything I've seen covering it has all been like, dude, what the fuck. But like you said, it's a talking piece. It's got people talking about Diablo, right. And Blizzard and fashion.
It is a brilliant piece of a obviously much larger marketing strategy that we've seen unveiled over the last 30 days, right? Like we're seeing little onion layers peeling off and really interesting marketing techniques and strategies. And again, just like tapping people in different industries that are influenced or fans of Diablo. I think that's cool. I'm not a fashion guy either, right?
Now that you're mentioning it, I have to go back and check, because I've only been seeing stuff from the gaming side. What is the fashion news headlines? Like, what's the fashion world talking about Diablo right now? Is Milan lighting up and being like, oh, what is this, type thing?
Separate fashion podcast that is discussing the Diablo video game right now?
Maybe it's possible. Maybe a collab is in.
Well dressed doppelgangers out there that are having this exact same conversation, and then they're going to transition into talking about more fashion.
I'm just putting it out there. I'm willing to go out there. I will be on a fashion show podcast to talk about Diablo. So if anybody out there listening to this show has their own fashion podcast and wants to talk about Diablo, I'm your guy.
There you go.
I have watched, I think, 2 seasons of Project Runway. And
I've actually watched more than I care to admit.
That's enough for me to have no opinion on this, because I know nothing about fashion. All of our Diablo t-shirts are high fashion now, gentlemen, so wear them with pride.
For sure. No, and I have a lot of those, so I guess if that puts me in the same bucket with these people, that's awesome. That's cool.
I think their value just went up.
Sounds legit.
It makes sense to me. Okay. So before we transition into our developer live stream, I think we should take a waypoint. Gentlemen, let's head to town, clear out our inventory, talk to some merchants. The point of the waypoint is to acknowledge people within our community who are helping us out, who are just genuinely good people. And the focus of this one is our amazing editor, Rush. If you don't know Rush, he was on our first podcast. Go back. You can listen to that after this has concluded. You can watch him. You can see his face. But really, Rush has been a cornerstone of the Diablo community since about D1. Pure Diablo was Diablo Inc. Gamers. Before that, it was DII.net. And essentially, it's been a part of delivering Diablo information for as long as there's been a Diablo. This podcast couldn't happen without him. And I'm amazingly appreciative of all the work that he has done for us, but also just Diablo itself. So thank you, Rush, for all of your hard work. And, you know, if you didn't like that, you can just cut it. Have you cleared your inventories? Did you fill up on potions? Are you ready to head back to the conversation?
Yeah. I'm good to go. I've got my potion in hand. Let's do this.
Okay, so coming on back,
which I should mention is a jackfruit mead from Keys Meads. It's really good.
Okay. I'm not a mead man myself, but I'll take your word for it being good. I trust you. So the big focus this week, we all huddled around our phones and computers and other devices, I guess maybe a TV, to watch a developer live stream and break down some information. So we got a couple of things that came out of it. I think the biggest, well, there's two big ones. We got our specs and we got the information on the beta. Let's save those for last. Let's cover the two that, while we're informative, I don't think we were into very much new territory. So we were given a little bit of information on armor, and we were given some information about strongholds. And really, the only stronghold that I was interested in was Pez's arms. This is the part of the podcast where we just, really objectify Pez.
Sure.
His arms look pretty muscly, is all I'm saying.
But he is a good-looking man, I'll say that.
Yeah. And if you followed his Twitter, he did like this amazing transformation. The dude looks good, and good on you, Pez.
Good-looking arms.
Yeah. But that's not the stronghold I want to talk about. So we have the stronghold system and we have the armor system. So the armor system, we were given a bunch of graphs kind of detailing how armor is going to work in Diablo 4. And I think that was all interesting, right? But I felt like it still very much hinges on knowing how itemization works more to like really feel invested in the percentages of armor, right?
Yeah.
It's nice to know. And I'm not saying like, hey, don't tell us information. I think it is good to know. And I thought those were interesting pieces. But the other part of it was like, yeah, but like, how do I make that happen? Like, I'm more concerned about putting the armor percentages together and how that all works as opposed to just how armor works in general. So armor and strongholds, not Pez's arms. What did you guys take away from it?
Yeah, I mean, it's always interesting to listen to a developer talk about something that they've worked on and are passionate about. And so going through and, listening to them discuss like the minutiae, like literally the minutiae of like the armor systems, like, and the scaling, how the amount of damage reduction that they factor in from just armor without factoring in resists and other things, scales up from from 10 to 100. But then also at the same time that the amount of actual damage resistance that you get per point of armor scales back down the other direction. It's just that you get more armor, you know, and that the whole thought and idea of it is like you're starting off in rags, like leather and cloth and such, and that no matter what it is that you're playing, by the end of the game, you're like putting on like plate armor and enchanted, you know, like ensorcelled pieces of gear and such in order to like really kind of like drive home that fantasy that I am like building up armor and I am, you know, continuing to take like less and less damage. As things increase, it's like in some other, I mean, which is like definitely true because in a lot of other games, it's just like, you know, you've got, you know, cloth and plate, and, you know, cloth is always like poor damage reduction and plate is always really up there. And, you know, you don't care about how much armor that you have if you're a caster or anything like that because just it's always going to be bad. And so actually kind of like building it into the system that all the classes kind of like have this equal benefit as they, ramp up and that all of their gear increases and becomes important, you know, into that aspect is cool. It's interesting to learn like those design philosophies. But like you're saying, it's just one piece of the whole. Like, we don't know the other types of damage reduction systems that are factoring in there. We don't know what the damage scaling is like at level 100 or like the upper echelons of the in-game content and such. And so, you know, we're not quite sure because, like, as we were just talking about in Diablo 3, where you need, like, you know, 95% damage reduction on your armor, 90% damage reduction from your resists, and top of 75%, you know, damage reduction from a set bonus, and then 30% dodge from a barbarian, and all those other types of stuff, you know, in order to, like, survive, you know, content at, like, the GR150 or what have you. So like knowing percentages doesn't really matter when we don't know what like the incoming damage is. And so while it was wonderful, you know, listening to him talk about the mechanic that he's worked on, it's an incomplete picture. You know, so actually getting, you know, actionable information from it was a little bit, you know, I guess lacking just because we don't know. After the game comes out, you know, and going back and revisiting that talk, you know, in July will probably be a lot more fruitful in gleaning information from than what it is at this point in time.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that there's a lot of context missing, right? Like, there's a lot of context that we just don't have yet. And it feels like it's misplaced in the timeline of things. You're right. I think that this would be, once we've had the game, like we've had it for a little while, we've played with it, to get this insider philosophy then would be cool too. But at the same time, it is good to see that insight, right? It is good to see the level of detail and thought that goes into that process. Will it translate to like sorceresses and sorcerers being just as like tanky or ability to take hits, I guess, as a barbarian? Probably not, right? Like, I wouldn't think so, but that's, I mean, it sounds like that's the idea, but it's like, you know, it's a caster class, right? So it's kind of supposed to be a little squishier, you know, things like, so I'm curious how it all plays out. I definitely think that it's cool to get the information. More information is always better than not, right? But honestly, if you want to give us that information, give us some loot tables. Like,
Yeah.
that's what we want, right? Like, give us the loot system. Give us your elevator pitch, a 2-minute elevator pitch on like what the loot system is to the development team. That would be really cool, right? Especially because we're about to have the beta too, so that'd be
Yeah.
really interesting.
You know, it's like I'm definitely not envious of the person that has to go through and go and plan out and pick these topics because
Right.
obviously they're not going to be exploring like the nitty-gritty of like the in-game itemization and stuff like that until the game is actually out because like one you want to leave those surprises for people, you know, in the game to go through and experience and such. At the same time, you know, you also, you know, you understand that just like what we're talking about with the armor is that without the complete picture, a lot of the things that you go through and be discussing doesn't have as much meaning contextually now as it will once we've been able to play the game and get our hands on it, you know, for a couple months or a couple weeks or something like that. And so the person that whose job it is in order to go through and pick the topics of what could be interesting and what are we allowed to discuss before the game comes out? It definitely sounds like it's probably a, you know, not an easy job. And then also finding something that's interesting to talk about, you
Yeah.
know,
It's got to
because
be
like
engaging.
these Yeah, because these are like the big developer talks that the entire Diablo community is going through and, you know, listening into to see what they're discussing and saying and such. It's not like the lightning talks of old that they would post on and have like a little 10-minute video with a, you know, a developer that's talking about how they came up with the animation cycle for teleport in Diablo 3. That was a really cool little 10-minute conversation
Yeah.
that taught me about like game design and you know, like using animation to communicate certain things and such. You know, but you know, that might not be a conversation that the entire community wants to hear, especially when we're all incredibly data driven, incredibly systems number driven and such. And that's what we want to know. That's what we don't have yet. We don't know the numbers, we don't know the systems, we don't know the things that make Diablo 4 tick yet. And that's what we want to know.
But again, it's always good to get information. I think you guys both bring it up. It would be nice to kind of revisit it in July. And
Yeah.
hopefully they
I
do
think it'll
kind of
be,
circle back to it.
I think it will be way more impactful in July. Like, I think like bookmarking it, coming back and watching it again in a couple months is gonna be like, oh. This makes way more sense now. I think there's a lot of that there too. I agree.
So then, the other little reveal, and we did get a lot of gameplay footage of it, was Strongholds. Now, remind me again, Nineball, were Strongholds available to you when you did the press beta?
I think that there was one available in the press beta. So I think, you know, I believe that they did confirm that there'll be at least a stronghold that's available to play in the beta. You know, it's cool. It's like an event that you have to go through. And unless you're in a party, like it's like a solo experience. Because I remember at one point going through and traveling and like kind of like walking into the event area and someone else that was like walking past me disappeared. You know, that they just kind of like disappeared off the screen type thing as I walked in, so it's almost like entering like the instance area. You know, you go through, you do a couple things there. There's, you know, like kind of like I think it was I guess I don't want to spoil too much, but it was like, you know, vampires, I think is the one that was there. Like you have to go through and hunt down like these blood clots and such. That was a lot of fun. But it's cool. It's an interesting little thing in order to go through and have done. And what they were going through and talking about, how it has like the permanent impact on the world. So you feel as if like your events are actually like having meaning and stuff, you know. So that way they talked about in some of the strongholds out there in the world where almost all of them, once you clear it, will like unlock a dungeon. And so it will give you aspect, it'll give you the capability of getting an aspect of power for your codex, and obviously just, you know, unlocking a dungeon for loot experience and such. And some of them will turn into like a new town hub, you know, with a waypoint and, you know, vendors and stuff. Because that was definitely like one of the things where the like even just like the Fractured Peaks was pretty big, and traveling in between like the towns, like going through and like doing some quests and just like going out and, like after you're done with like the story, just doing side quests or grinding and such, you could find yourself just like teleporting back to town. And you know, because there's not like something that's just like nearby. The world had more weight to it in terms of like traveling around places. And so unlocking like an extra like little town hub or something like that to give you know, more quests or just as another place that I can divert to you know, salvage things because inventory space was kind of limited. You know, it's just, you know, cool. Now, obviously I care about like the story impacts and stuff like that. Not everyone will. And then the tied into the renown system, which is going to give you, which is like one of the big kind of like end game systems because it gives you extra skill points, gives you extra potion charges, which is, you know, really good. And also from what we saw at the end of it would give you extra paragon points for like the end game progression for the paragon boards.
Yeah, I don't know. I really, you've got me fascinated now because I think that Diablo 2 and Diablo 3 have just distracted me from the fact that the beta is as close as it is, which I know we're gonna get to in a second, right? But
Yeah.
now there's so many things I want to try. I'm really excited about the stronghold system. I think the stronghold system is one of the things that's got me most excited about Diablo 4. I always love that in games where you can, you know, where the story can have an impact on the world. And the ability, like you said, to open up different town hubs. I mean, you know, I'm really curious how the map plays out. Obviously, I haven't gotten my hands on it, but I think that, you know, the ability to open up those different nodes and dungeons and things like that, and to like just to change the world as you see it, is really cool. And it's cool to see that design element come into a Diablo game, because we obviously haven't had that before, right? Again, you know, I'm a fan of MMO games. I'm interested how it plays out in the Diablo setting for sure, but I'm definitely intrigued by it. And again, big story fan myself too. So I, you know, anything that adds some more little story tidbits and fleshes the world out more is gonna be really cool. Really, really cool.
Yep.
Now, if I gotta save a bunch of druids though, I'm gonna be a little salty.
We didn't get to play in Skazglen, so I'm not too sure.
I can't imagine druids will need your help. They're probably pretty self-sufficient. Okay. They're doing just fine.
Okay. What I'm just hearing is they're all dead already. They didn't even survive. Yeah.
That's
probably possible. I do like the stronghold system. I kind of like this concept that my Diablo 4 world will be different than your Diablo 4 world. And be different than somebody else's. Like, you don't have to engage with them. Maybe I bypass them, and then I get to go find something new later on. That just sounds fun. And then the world itself changing based on your actions, having a new town, a new dungeon, because you did something. That's pretty cool. I will always, you know, going back to like D2. Act one's always act one. I'm not finding anything new there anymore. In terms of like expansion, you know, it sounds like this is something that could be integrated then onto the world map in different spots too. And the world continues to shift.
I think it's interesting because, like, from a narrative standpoint, you know, you've already ingrained in the player with the stronghold system of, you know, you going and defeating enemies and unlocking a town. So it is a lot easier to then later, like in a season or expansion or something like that, then introduce mechanics where enemies take back the town. And so you've now lost like a town hub, and it gives you a reason to like go back into it. You know, so it could be something for like future content that they use where, you know, you saved this particular stronghold, and then now the town that you were used to, well, all the enemies traveled over there and they've taken that one. And so now you have a new stronghold, like in order to go through and do, or some other type of event or something like that, in order to take part in.
Or we turn Diablo into a tower defense game.
There's that.
I'd be okay with it. Honestly, I'd be okay with it.
That sounds like a season 14 kind of thing.
You know, it's like, yeah, it's like you got the track and you've got the fallen that are going through and you're having to stop them from getting to the waypoint at the end. And, you know, you kind of just build like a catapult launcher and you're just launching druids to go and kill the fallen because you're level one. You can't afford anything better.
The most powerful thing in Sanctuary. I gotcha.
Yeah. And so you level up, you get to level two. And so, you know, you get the rogue follower from like Act 1 and D2 because they're obviously better than any druid.
I think that the stronghold is also like the gameplay implications. I don't know, like the idea of them opening a dungeon, which thus opens an aspect, is going to lead to some really interesting, like, are we going to like see like, okay, so once you hit like a certain level, now all sorcerers want to go do this dungeon or go do this stronghold specifically, so they can then in turn go ahead and go do this dungeon to get this specific aspect, to be able to put it in a codec, you know, like I think that's interesting too. I don't know. That's really cool to see how it fleshes out. I just am sitting here just like, can it just be like 2 weeks from now?
A little over 2 weeks. Yeah.
I know. Right. We're close.
So a nice transition there, is we have our dates. We talked about that last podcast. We will go into the nitty gritty of the beta, but we finally, you know, 4 months away from release. Oh, sorry, 3 months away from release. It's March. I'm still mentally, you know, in February. We found out what we need to actually have in order to play it. And thankfully, I've got a bunch of potatoes, and I'm going to be just fine playing Diablo 4 on them. It's not. I don't think the specs for Diablo 4 aren't that surprising. Diablo and Blizzard are really good when it comes to optimization. Did anything stand out at these specs that you guys had noticed?
Just that it would run on my current PC. My current PC is kind of ass. Like, to be real, like I've got a really nice gaming laptop that I bought recently, but my PC, I haven't upgraded it, and aside from like hard drive space, probably 5-6 years, right? So it's pretty outdated at this point, you know. So, but it seems like it would be able to run on that. It could definitely run on my laptop, but you know, I'm excited just because now I have the specs, right? Like, regardless of whether they're in, you know, super hard to achieve, or which they're not at all, by the way, they're not. They're relatively laid back, I would say. But that'll allow me to now like build the PC I want to build for Diablo 4, which I had planned to do to begin with. And I think that's the biggest thing, is like, this has given me a long enough runway to kind of plan out that purchase. Because I really, like, I would love to, you know, Diablo 4 launch day, have a really nice setup to just kind of start fresh with D4. I did it with D3 as well too. And I've just had to upgrade pieces as I went, but I've been waiting on upgrading my PC until I had these specs. So now that that is gone, now I can, like, you know, really dive in and get some good stuff. So I'm excited.
Yeah, I mean, like Diablo 3 and, like, you know, for a little bit there, World of Warcraft were like the only games that I was really ever playing. And so I my computer, I just rebuilt it, you know, June, July of last year. You know, prior to that, my other computer I built 2 weeks before the launch of Diablo 3. You know, so that was a 10-year-old PC, and I had upgraded it to a 2070. And it, you know, that otherwise it was still the same thing, and it was running, you know, games perfectly fine. So I wasn't going out there and playing games. I didn't know that it was like kind of like a big concern with a lot of modern games are going through and coming out with PCs, that a lot of AAA titles that come out actually have some pretty like gnarly system requirements.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's, you know, kind of like just like how they release. Whereas with like Blizzard, I'm used to it, like Blizzard games, there's usually a high level of optimization that goes into the titles, so that it can actually like run on older hardware and such. Obviously, it's not going to be the best, you know, graphic settings, you know, in order to go through and run on that. And we do also know that ray tracing will eventually be added in. It won't be at launch, but it will come later. So we'll get like ray tracing with like the real time lighting and reflections and stuff like that. So there will be even more, you know, to experience within the game. But hey, I mean, better accessibility at the end of the day,
accessibility, you know, for sure.
Yeah. At the end of the day, being able to play the game is the most important thing. You know, and of course the game being fun to play versus graphics. Like, you know, what? I still will stop like going through, and you know, I'll play every Diablo 3 season for like a couple of weeks, stop, and then, you know, like 3-4 months or 5 months later, come back and like play the new season, and I'll just kind of like stop like in town, and you know, like one of those things, like you ever just like go into like the tavern in Act 1, like up to Leah's room, and just Absolutely. Like look at the candles,
yeah,
and like all the books and stuff. Like, the game looks beautiful. Yeah. You know, obviously the character avatars are showing their age,
for sure,
but like the backgrounds and stuff like that, the games just look, they look beautiful, they're wonderful to look at. And I'm sure you know, Diablo 4, when we get to see it in its full greatness and such, will have just as, you know, awe-inspiring you know, parts in it. I remember there's a citadel that you like walk into in the beta that we're going to be able to play, you know, that I got access to in December. That you're like walking up to it, and it's, you know, this big holy fortress like up in the mountains and stuff like that. And just as you're walking towards it, the camera begins to like pull out, so you get to see like the whole scope as you're walking across the drawbridge, and like the portcullis is all closed and such. And it's just like, okay, that's cool, you know, like that. Yeah. That's cool how it knows what it is, and it plays with some of those. It's not a cinematic or anything like that, but it definitely is like, this is something important, and you're like, okay, yeah, that was pretty nice. So they're doing work, you know, with the graphics and the camera, the engine and all of that, to try and hone in some of those moments in the story.
Well, and I think to speak to the accessibility too, like, I think there's something we have to remember, and I had just like kind of reminded myself, like, I can't imagine what it's like to be a game developer or designer that has to like figure this out, but like they're developing this for essentially like three generations of machines, right? With what PCs can do, right, at the top end. The next gen consoles that it's going to be on, right? Xbox Series X, PS5, with high amounts of ray tracing and graphic acceleration, especially for consoles. And then also Xbox One and PS4, right? Which is a whole different generation. Not quite as like able to push graphically. I mean, still there's some power in those machines. But then even in the Switch, right? Like, so this game has to work on.
Have they? I don't think they've actually announced it for Switch.
Yeah, Diablo 4 is coming on the Switch.
I don't think so.
Is that wrong?
Yeah.
I could have swore it was.
No, it has not been announced for
Maybe it was
Switch.
the, maybe it was a.
And then now Rush is just sitting there. It's like, why
It's
is
like
everybody
what
typing? Like,
am I? Yeah, because it when you get the pre-purchase, it's just the Battle.net and then
maybe it was
Xbox and
later on Switch then, huh? I thought it was on Switch too. Either way, still from Xbox One and PS4 up to the next gen systems to the PC, there's just so, I mean, first of all, how do you make a game that fits into all those buckets but still pushes the graphics of each system without breaking them? That's a huge challenge, right? I don't know. That's just crazy to me. And I can't imagine the work that goes into doing that. But we all know Blizzard, especially the quality visually that the Blizzard puts out. I mean, it's gonna be nuts just from the cinematics we've seen, let alone the gameplay, you know?
Yeah, I think that they talked about that a little bit, like not obviously not during this developer talk, but during like the IGN Fan Fest. Like what little we did get to learn is that like it all runs off of the same engine, and so it probably is very similar to a thing that they do in Diablo Immortal, where there's a couple different like character renders. And so there's like your character render for when you're just going through and like playing the game, and it has everything where it's like it knows that it's like isometric format. You don't really care that like you're far removed from the camera. Your characters are tiny. But then when it goes in, like when you're playing through the campaign, when it goes through to have kind of like one of the in-game cutscenes, it will switch the character models over, and that they have like much higher textures. On those kind of like cinematic character models, but all the rigging and everything else is still the same. It's still being handled within the same engine, and it just is like a switch that it flips to go through and do that. And it's probably, it's like because we now know that like the in-game cinematics are all going to feature your character, and they obviously have like these upped character models, for those cinematics, so that way you get to see you, your armor, your weapon, and all of its full glory. Instead of always being relegated like to the background while, Tyrael and Kane are the only ones that are ever appearing, or Marius, are the only things you ever get to see a cinematic of. Now you get to be in the cinematic. So definitely, I mean, and the reason why I went on that tangent was because it makes sense that they probably are able to scale that system for a PS4 versus like a PC, and such, where they have different quality character models depending upon like what system or what system specs that you're running on, while still being able to, it's a cinematic, turn on the high def, type thing.
Well, I'm just happy that there are more people that get to play, that nobody has to go and get a second mortgage for a brand new PC, myself included. And you just get to
And I mean,
play.
speaking of accessibility, they also mentioned in the stream itself that they're going to be talking about in the future more accessibility options, for people that might have, some impediment. It's, preventing them from playing the game as, we, three healthy white Caucasian males, are capable of going through and playing, and playing the game and such. But, for those that, color blindness, I know, is like one of the big ones for like Diablo 3 and pushing accessibility in there, as well as having controller support, because not everybody can use a mouse and keyboard, and so having PC controller support and a whole breadth of other accessibility options they're going to discuss more in the future. I don't remember whether they said it was going to be in one of the developer updates or a blog or something like that, but they did say that they've got a lot more to talk about, like actual accessibility options for playing the game.
Yeah, which is always a good thing. Can't complain about that. Now, what we can complain about is the beta. First weekend, we get three classes. The three classes we've all, you know, they're all right. And then we only get to spend one weekend with the classes that everybody wants to play, Druid and the other one.
So my theory is that, you know, they did the easy classes, the sorceress, the rogue, the barbarian, the big fantasy archetypes, the massive tropes, things that will just be easy for people to go through, get their heads around and such. And then they also, at the same time, they didn't want to trick, they wanted those classes in order to go through and get played. So they didn't want to introduce the best class in the game, you know, just right off the bat, because everybody would just go through and play it. But at the same time, they also didn't want to put people off by introducing the worst class in the game. And so they gave you the option to at least play a weekend, get some experience and stuff like that. And then for the open beta, you know, heaven help you if you play a druid, their class mechanic is fleas. You know, it's just, it gives you the itch, you know, and the only way to solve it is playing something else. And then of course the necromancer, which is, you know, the absolute best class, in existence. So there you go. It's all marketing.
And also, I was wrong, right? Like, I definitely did not think that they would unlock all the classes. That shocked me, genuinely. I think that's really cool. It does tell me that there's a lot of confidence placed in that beta, right? Like, you're kind of laying a lot out there for everyone to just literally try any part of it. That's huge. Betas don't typically have that kind of breadth, so that's really neat. I think that's good. Definitely caught me off guard. I will still be playing Sorceress, because that's all I care about.
I don't have any crow, but I've got some penguins.
I don't have any crow either. I guess I'll have to work on that, you know.
We'll take any crow you got, listeners. Send it in, and we'll get it to them. Any crow. Whatever.
Any.
I don't care. Now, what we do know, if we go back to it, as you mentioned about playing a sorceress, is the progress you make in one beta weekend will transfer over to the next. That doesn't help me, because the second I get my hands on a druid, that's what I want to play, because I finally will get the answer to my question, which is, what is the class mechanic? At least I hope I will get.
It's fleet. Come on. But I think that the most important part here, and this is what I'm really excited about, like deep in my soul, is that that means on the second beta weekend, I could be sniping lobby druids that are running through the world. That's what I'm excited about. I'm excited about
that. Will PvP be enabled? Was it enabled
in the certain zones? I'm sure.
I don't think that there was a PvP area in the Fractured Peaks.
Oh, that's right. It's all based on, we only have the certain areas unlocked. Yeah. Aww, I really want to try the PvP. That's all right. I'm still gonna play the shit out of it. So.
Yeah, I mean, like that. That's a. No, you're just gonna have to leave us poor druids alone.
Just stomp some level 3 and 4 druids just running through. Yeah, never mind then. That's okay. I'll wait for the live game.
You played a rogue in Stranglethorn Vale, didn't you?
Yes, 100%. I mained a rogue for the last 20 years, pretty much. So
surprisingly, one more year, and that's true.
I know, right? Yeah, it's 19. Yeah.
You won't have to worry. You won't see any druids in the wild anyway. We're not that popular.
No one will.
But I will point out, when they were discussing what classes they were going to play, our favorite man with the strong arms, Pez, is on the side of druids. So
I did see that. Knocks him down a peg or two. Sorry. It's just as what it is.
I admire him in so many more ways now.
Well, all I have to say is, Pez, well, thank God you're beautiful, because your choices of classes are terrible.
Terrible choices. It's all right. It's fine.
This is a very complimentary Pez podcast.
It is.
We should take him down a peg at some point. But, okay, so we got our classes that were revealed for the beta. There is the nice surprise that we do get to play the two classes that we haven't gotten any info on in a while. And then, in tandem with that, we're also going to get rewarded for playing, which in and of itself is its own treat. But we are going to be honored with two titles And what probably stole the show and my Twitter feed, an adorable wolf pup to put on our back.
Very cute.
We talked about a pre-show, but I was really curious when they announced there was going to be a reward about what it would be. We have cosmetic rewards in Diablo 3. They do have a tendency to tilt into a winged category. And that, from what we've seen from Diablo 4, would seem off. It seems like we're pushing a little bit past that, like, massively winged avatar running around, surrounded by other massively winged avatars. And this is a little more muted, and I liked it. Thoughts? Were you hoping for something different?
I mean, he's a cute boy. I thought it was cool, but I mean, my favorite cosmetic set in D3 is definitely Materials Wings. So, that's I mean, I'm wearing them right now. So, yep. And then plus the new pet in the new season also had Materials Wings, right? The new pet, badass little dragon boy with badass little Materials Wings. We love it.
Technically, Dragon Girl.
Oh, sorry, didn't realize it was female. My bad.
Yeah, I only know that because the artist was talking about her on Twitter.
Got you. Yeah, I had no idea. I didn't know if there was some sort of context clue I missed, like where
No.
I'm like, oh God, what have I done? It's 2023. You don't do that. Yeah.
And shout out to Kimba, who was a former Diablo CM, now turned Diablo artist.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
Yeah,
Yeah,
she's
she's the
amazingly
Blizzard.
talented.
Yep. She all the stuff in Diablo 3 over the last year's worth of seasons has all been her, the portraits. So other interesting fact, she was talking about the portrait frame that you unlock for Guardian in Diablo 3. And it's all the different pieces of all of the evils because it's like, like the prime hunter. So you're hunting all of the prime evils and such. And so it's got pieces of all of the seven evils on that little portrait frame, and specifically the part where it has like Asmodan's horn and such. So
Yeah.
it's got like the rings hanging off of it. Specifically, just so that way you all know, those were designed as they are Asmodan's exquisite nipple rings.
Nipples.
And that is now in your head, and you can't remove
Nice.
it. Yeah, so
Nice.
that portrait has Asmodan's nipple rings in it.
So why don't we have a jewelry slot in our nipples in Diablo 4? Like, I feel like
I think that is the conversation that we should be having.
you had two ring slots, you got the necklace slot, right? Just add two
May
nipple slots, right?
Maybe that's where the rings are, actually, though. Because
Maybe
why
that's
aren't we
true.
wearing rings on all of our fingers?
Right, why do we only wear two?
Well,
I only
that's a good
have two
point.
nipples.
That's true.
Yeah.
And here we are, another podcast talking about nipples. Yeah, not where I expected it to be.
Well,
But that's
anyways,
okay.
back on topic, Tyrael's wings. As far as like the cosmetics go, I want to say that they talked about this during the first developer stream in December, that they did want to focus a bit more like grounded and not have everybody walking around with just like the giant glowy and Andariel, or angelic wings, even though Andariel's wings are also in Diablo 3. And angelic wings and stuff like that. And so like there are Anarius's wings in Diablo 4 with pre-ordering a certain edition of the game, but it's an emote. So you can't just run around with it. You have to sit there and do the emote, and then I don't know how it looks, but I imagine that you then like sprout the wings or whatever, and then it kind of like flashes back. So it's something that you can only do like temporarily. You can't just like be running around the world and all of a sudden you see giant glowing angel like running across to, like break your immersion or anything like that. But it is it's definitely, I guess, coming from like the art direction standpoint of trying to make things more grounded. And yeah, it's like having a cute little wolf pup on your back as you're
He's a
going
cute
and
boy.
running around. Yeah. Yeah, it's cute. It's funny. I like it.
I
When
think
can I get a penguin?
I want
this
a cat.
is, we've seen like just little pieces of like cosmetics, right? We've seen like what armor sets look like that you can assemble, and then we've seen ones that you can buy. This is kind of our first like reveal of what a reward would look like, and I imagine there are more cosmetic rewards we might be able to earn in other ways. If this is the direction that they're taking, I'm not saying just slap a wolf pup on everything, but I like it. I think that being able to go into town, like I think back to like Diablo 2, walking into town and like looking at the way other characters are put out and like thinking like, oh, I like how that is. I want to emulate that in some way. That I'm all for that.
Right.
As opposed to like, unfortunately the way Diablo 3 is, it is so dependent on sets. They all kind of look the same, and yeah, we can change it in the wardrobe, but I just never got that feeling by association. So if it's a little more grounded and rooted in a little bit more realism, I'm fine with it. I think it'll be a good direction to kind of go in.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so we've covered a lot from tattoos to fashion shows, live streams. Any last
Eating
thoughts on
crow.
the Eating Crow? Yes. Before we close out, this is our second live stream that we have received, and they are going to keep going forward. If you could change one thing about it, what would you change?
Third party that doesn't work for Blizzard asking the questions, and not in a sense that they're like challenging or hard questions, but just to make I think that man, Pez does such a great job with those interviews and the interview questions, and he's got a really great personality. I think that like I think there's a lead in to bring other parts of the community into those live streams, to actually maybe even do like obviously vetted, but questions from chat, things like that. To make it more impactful and a reason to be live, right? Again, for the second live stream in a row, they could have just been pre-recorded and it wouldn't really mattered that it was live because there wasn't really an aspect to it that I don't know that made it feel like that was necessary. So I would say that number one.
We talked just a little bit pre-show kind of on that. Like, Pez is well versed in what's happening in Diablo, and when he asks a question, he's asking a question he knows the answer to. So like part of the fun of like being able to do these kind of interviews and talk is to like see somebody taking it in, right? Of learning as you go.
When they're reactionary question too, right? Like they get their
Right.
answer, then that sparks
And then
a
the
right.
follow-up. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's what's missing, I think, right now.
Right, because I think you're spot on with that. And if you do bring in a third person, yeah, you could still vet those questions, but their reaction, they're going to learn the information when you speak it, right? And that's a little bit more exciting. And then obviously, somebody who's not on the payroll is going to have a different feeling to it. But then also, you can't control what somebody you don't employ is going to say.
Yeah,
They
right.
are live, so mitigating risks and all that kind of stuff, totally get. But I like the idea. Nineball, if you were going to change something about the live stream, what would it be?
I think that they took steps at being a little bit better with the QA section, but I think it really just kind of like drilling back into that point, leveraging the format better, like the live, being live and actually just like taking questions from chat, like I guess maybe having a way of like actually like highlighting it a bit more, because like during like the BlizzCon and stuff like that, like the one BlizzCon line that we got, they would actually have like the tweet with the question or something come up, so you saw who asked the question and all that, to just have like a little bit more of that interaction, for it, I think is only the only thing that is missing in my opinion.
Well,
I
and there's a ton of content creators that can help with that too, right? To be
yeah
able to do that, but still have a little more vetted control over the situation and the questions. There's
yeah
Diablo partners out there, right? There's tons of great YouTubers and streamers. I think there's a pool of people that could really be a part of that too.
yeah definitely. And just speaking of BlizzCon line, I mean they did that, Mr. Llama and Bloodshed both got to
Right.
ask questions. It was obviously it wasn't live, it was pre-recorded, You know, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be really cool to have like macro ask questions to the development team, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. There's just a lot of ways you could look at it, but yeah, there's a pretty big opportunity there, and maybe that's something they're already exploring. You know, maybe this is just kind of start things off, see how it goes, evolve it. We know these things evolve over time. They've done a really good job, but I do think that there's some follow up, like you said, and reaction that would be a little cool to see, a little more organic.
I'm happy with the content that they're going through and doing. It's a great start. And you know, I'm sure it's just something that I would like to continue to see, you know, moving forward, you know, every 3 months, every 2 months, every month, you know, go through, get, you know, topics that, and obviously it will become easier because I'm sure like there's a lot of questions that people are asking about the story, about in-game, about all these things that they can't talk about because the game's not out, and that things will probably be a little bit more fluid and they'll be able to actually like pull more questions from the audience and stuff like that once the game's out and they can talk about everything. You know, we know what questions to ask about in-game. You know, why is this item crap? Why do you hate barbarians? You know, why did this character die or whatever? You know, it's like, we'll actually be able to ask like more pertinent questions, you know, to the in the grand scheme of things.
Yep.
Yeah. But for number two, I think they're moving in the right direction. They're getting better. It seems like they're starting to get more comfortable with it too, you know, and I can't imagine.
They started pieing each other in the face. So I say that they definitely were a lot more comfortable with this one. Well, that's for sure.
No, but like you could tell, like as it started, like nerves and stuff like that, and they started to settle, and that was good to see. And I think like more of that leads to better of it. And I can't imagine the stress that to have to, like, I've given speeches before and done public speaking, and that's fine because like I can see everybody, right? I can look out into an audience and kind of go with it. But to like just see a number on the screen and understand that there are thousands of people watching you would be a little nerve-wracking, and you can't gauge how it's going at any point. Like you could maybe see a feed, but like that's not a true level of anything. So like that would be tough. But I do think like they hit their stride, they kind of got into it, and then, you know, hopefully they just kind of take it. And I'd be really excited to see what these look like once the game is live. Once the game is live, where do we go? Because then it's kind of like you get to take some of the shackles off and see what they can really do. So that'll be fun.
And let's be honest too, because with Diablo has a history of some pretty vitriolic moments during Q&As, right? Mm-hmm. So, and not once, not even twice, like 4, 5, 6 times we've had some really memorable things happen. So I also get trepidation. You know, I completely get it. You want to make sure it's a safe space and it's protected. So the nerves is more than just the people count, right, and the amount of people watching you, but also just like the history of the Diablo franchise and how divisive the games have been, and different things have been. They've been very intentional with everything that they have done, and I think they're handling it very, very well. But yeah, I think there's always room to grow, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we are going to get another one soon enough. We were told that they're going to come back to us with some more information once the beta has ended. And then I think we'll talk next once the beta has ended as well, because I think we're going to have a lot to talk about. And we're definitely not going to talk during that weekend because we're all going to be playing. So let's close it. We're going to be playing it. It's going to happen. I'm so excited. So. Let's close as we always do with a moo, moo.
Moo, 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 moo.